And she said that she...
It's Channel Two Right. It is Channel Two Right. It's beginning of Channel Two Right. After supper, Tuesday, 21st October, 69. It is Channel Two Right. It's Channel Two Right. Tuesday after supper, 21st October, 69.
Lesson, last week. This was her second lesson. And it was a right interesting experience, guys.
Coming soon.
I started her off like I did before. I put her on the, with a bareback pad and out on a lunge.
And nothing to hold to.
And nothing to hold to. I just stick her out there, Cookie, and let her go. And, I've got a few things I have her do. They're exercises, really. But she has to do them on a horse. It makes her forget that she's on a horse, you know. Makes them relax. And then I took the lunge tape off and just gave her the reins. We went, and I never did put saddle on. I took her out to where I fixed that manège, the school, with palm fronds, and had her work in there on control. Just see if she could keep walk Noopy in a straight line or make Noopy do a circle. Of course, she can't do it yet. But she knows what I want, and she can see where I'm heading. So you get that it's fun teaching her. And today you could see some improvement. Now last week you couldn't see much. Because she was having to struggle with Pussy all the time. Because she didn't have any place marked, she couldn't see where she was going. But this week, with that my old pond fronds out there, she had some. She could see where she was going, and she could concentrate on making Pussy do what he was supposed to. And we walked around. She walked around in circles for a while, see if she could walk a straight line, that sort of thing. And then I started in on some things she hadn't thought about. And I haven't talked about much, but they're things like what you do on a horse. Just the very most basic thing you do on a horse. And it sounds like an equation in physics, control of forward energy. But you see, I don't just tell her that. We work that out. And then we go out, we started talking about walking, just walking. And what it might mean if you were just walking a horse. And she said, I asked her I use this term, active walk, and I asked her what I meant by it. She says, well, I don't know. I said, well, guess. She says, well, I suppose you mean you don't want too fast to walk, but you don't want it too slow either. I said, well, that's pretty close. But there's one little thing you've forgotten. That's if the horse should want to go a little faster than you're letting it. You're right, it shouldn't be too fast, but he should want to go that little bit faster.
Oh.
Because then you've got some energy to control. You've got something to do something with. If he's just walking at that speed and has no energy for you to work with, then if you suddenly wanted to trot on or walk faster, you'd have to give him one with the stick or kicking one with your legs or something to get him going. But if he wants to go faster and you're holding him back, then all you got to do is let him go. And so we worked on that for a while, just having her see if she could keep Pussy walking actively. And she did. She did pretty well, considering that she hasn't got the legs and back and hands to really do a good job yet. But it started her thinking, you see.
Well, it started me thinking.
Well, and then we went on.
You mean it, whether or not Pussy does an active walk depends partly on who's sitting on her.
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
A controlled forward movement is what you're thinking about.
Yeah, all the time. This is what I strive to get. That you create energy with the horse, and then you control where it goes and how it goes. But until you've got that energy, you aren't riding, you aren't doing anything. You're just on a horse. And you can have a lot of fun just being on a horse, but you aren't riding. And
well, now she takes all that in.
Yeah, she takes it in. She takes it in. She was really excited when we got through. We went through some other things too. We talked about sort of gave us this formula, three principles of equitation. Control of forward energy is one of them, the first one, the most important. And then I went through the gates with her and what time they were in and how the horse moves his legs. This was purely academic stuff, sort of almost a lecture, but something to give her a chance to cool the horse out. You're still teaching him something. And we went through how the horse moves its legs and where it puts its feet and this sort of thing. And from there we went to the second principle, which is rhythm. Actually, it's the third, but I said it was the second. We went to another one, let's just put it that way, to rhythm. And that you should try and keep an even rhythm. Like for your walk, if you're counting it to yourself, should be even. If you're counting the trot to yourself, you shouldn't be going fast and then slow and then fast and then slow. You should be able to keep your horse at an even pace. And we worked around with that for a little while, and I let her try trotting, see if she could keep Pussy at an even pace and so forth.
Hey, this classification.
Mm-hmm. About it was, when she got through, when she got off that horse, she was excited. She wanted to know more. And when I suggested that she do a little research, she could find a book in the library and do a little research and come back next week and see if she could tell me what the third principle of equitation was and a little bit more about how a horse moved. She was excited. She wanted to go do it right then.
Well, she can actually find that in the books.
Yeah, she can find it if she looks, if she knows how to look.
Lead off on Tony.
On Tony?
Yeah.
I don't believe Cookie's heard you talk about Tony. I'm real jealous of Tony. That's her favorite horse.
She hadn't
met many like Tony.
Not many. Because Tony, I keep telling that Tony pays attention. You get on Tony and he's all ready to go. He's listening right away. He's got that funny sort of okay boss, what we gonna do now? Don't fear it. And it's just not something you meet often. I mean, little man doesn't have it, not the same way. Little man's cooperative, but he doesn't have that spark.
How about it, Cookie?
What do you attribute to, Cookie?
Frank.
You don't think it's a horse, you think it's Frank?
I think it's Frank. Because since we brought that horse home in June, he has had his whole heart and mind set on that horse. Mm-hmm. And he does nothing. He plays with that horse. He'll get him out in the front yard after we got him so he could handle him. And he was just, I told him he was playing with him. And he'd get mad at with him, and he said, "You'll see." But I didn't know that little stinker had a book from the library at school that he had been reading that he was getting all of his tips from. on what, how to make that horse do what he wanted him to do.
Must have been a good book.
And he could make him stand, he could jump off of him. That horse would stop just right now. Frank could run around the house and hide. That horse would stand right there.
Why could he?
It's the truth. He can drop one rein, that horse will stop, and Frank can run around the house, and he'd stay there. I saw him do it. I didn't know where in the world he got the guts to even attempt that. I didn't know he had a book. Had you been reading? He couldn't understand part of it. He went and asked his voag teacher what it meant. And his voag teacher straightened him out. And he came home and tried it. But now, little man, I think, personally, I think we've done wonders with that horse since we got him by his previous treatment.
Oh, yeah. I would never deny that.
That was the thing about little man, Tony, when you got him. He bit you.
That's right. He almost bit my little finger off. I took me a tube before to him. I don't care. He had to quit it. And he hadn't attempted to bite me since. He bit Law, but he hadn't attempted to bite the old man.
Well, he just about quit that foolishness.
He doesn't attempt it anymore.
But he bit Law.
That's right. And he bit me. Because he almost got my little finger off. The end of my little finger. I ain't joking you. That finger's still sore.
But you have seen other horses like that,
Well, they've got that spark?
Yes.
Yeah.
Willing.
Yeah. I.
Right.
Go on.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, there was a pony I worked up in North Carolina with that had that same willingness. And he was one that was brought as a 3-year-old. I did most 3-year-old work with that one. And he was a lovely pony. I still ride him. I go up to people that own him now, and I ride that pony before I ride their horses. He's so easy to just got that light touch, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just so wanting to please and willing to do what you want to do, just to think the way you want to think.
Well, some horses like to be ridden and some don't care.
Before we took him to West Virginia, you had to watch him because he'd kick you.
Well, this is what surprised me, Cookie, because here's a little pony that kicks.
Alice can ride him any place she wants to, and he's just an old deadhead. But you let a growing person get on him that knows what they're doing, and he's a different horse. Did you notice that, Barbara? When the kids were riding him out here in the yard, you could get on him and he was a different horse.
Oh.
Frank can get on him, he's a different type of horse altogether.
A place where he had worked, and he mentioned that one of the hunts, you know, fox hunting, and he mentioned a man who had been in charge of one of these hunts, Mr. Pilkington. And I had known a Major Pilkington over there. Yeah. He kept, when I was there, he kept one horse at Tilk. But before, when he was a young man, he used to have, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6. And he used to keep about 3 at Tilk's, and he would go hunting every, you know, these hunts go out about 3 times a week. Normally, and he would go whenever he could. He was, his father was, and he after him were silent partners in Pilkington Glass, which is one of the largest glass firms in the world. But they were silent partners. They didn't have to do with any of the business. They just got the money. And so he was pretty, had sort of this life of polo and hunting and British Army officer. And then when I knew him, he was getting on. He only had one lung left. He'd insist on going hunting. He would get out there and he would go, you know, they all meet at one place. All the horses and the hounds would meet at one place. And it's a big, what it is a gossip session. Everybody goes and talks to everybody they know, and then they go off. They sit, let the hounds get off, and the hunt begins. But Major Pilkington, by the time I knew, he never got beyond the meet. He'd walk around on spangles and talk to all his friends, and then he would decide that it was too foggy or too cold, and he couldn't go. So he'd load spangles back in the trailer, and they'd come back. But he was such a character. He was one of these. He dressed in knickers and these high knee socks and heavy walking shoes. And
people don't wear knickers now.
No, nobody wears knickers now.
That's old fashioned.
Old fashioned, you know, baggy down to the knee and then knee socks. He looked like an Englishman walking out of a 19th century print. He really did. And except for his coat, I don't know where he picked that up from. It looked a bit like an old dressing gown. Now, heaven knows where he got it, but he insisted it was a coat, and he wore it as a coat. That didn't even come from a 19th century print. But he would come down the yard with his coat flopping out behind him, and he was a thin little man, and he'd attack you, catch you. Want to know where Master Tilk was, and he had, you know, a sharp voice, and this manner that says, if I tell you to go get my horse, you'll go get my horse, and you won't look twice. You won't even think about it. Any comeback or anything like that. It would it could cow you if you let it.
Well, now that wasn't a military manner he had.
No, it wasn't military. It was more I don't know how to, what you call it. It's just the manner of either a very successful man or a man who's simply used to being obeyed.
Yeah. That's not my manner of cooking. I'm always surprised if I... Excuse me, Mom.
Sorry. Oh, dear. So he would... I'd answer the phone with Windmill Hill Riding Academy. May I help you? And almost always his standard reply is, no, I can help you. That was it. No doubt about who was helping who was in a position to help. And he would, he had all these sort of qualities that you sort of think of in an English gentleman, but you wouldn't expect to ever meet one. Because he would go over his bills with Mr. Tilk. Mr. Tilk, when he first had him as a client, he had one of his horses sick. And he had all these extra vet bills on his bill. And Major Pilkington was coming to go over that bill with him, and he didn't know how he was going to take those extra charges. So he got the bill ready, and they went to the office, and Mr. Tilk sort of wondering how this was going to go. And they started going over that bill, and he came to the first time bill so much for transporting a horse to a hunt. He started talking about the hunt, and he talked about where they found the fox, how far they followed it, and where it went to earth. Then he went down the bill, every hunt, who was at the meet, all the details of the hunt. Didn't mention of that bit. Didn't even see him on the paper. He just, that wasn't part of it. He wasn't interested. And when he paid his bills, you know, they had pounds, shillings, and pence. What used to be, and it used to be the old custom was that a gentleman didn't pay pence. He would just drop them because they were too small an amount, you see. And this was something he carried on. He wouldn't pay pence. All his bills were paid in pounds and shillings and never in pence. He got billed for 1 and 6. I'm sure he'd drop the 6. He was an amazing character. When he'd go to a hunt, he knew everybody in the area, and he knew all the country, knew every fence, every copse of woods. He'd hunted it all, you see. He saw it from a huntsman's point of view. As a sort of a lord of the manor, he knew his shire. And he would go, if you went to a hunt with him, he would go out on the way to the hunt. He would point out the house, the old houses, and he'd tell you about the old families, and he'd talk about the woods and the copses of trees, and he'd say, maybe he'd talk about a hunt that where they'd found a fox there or something. And he'd give you the name. See, in England, if you've got an acre that's been fenced off for more than 15 years, it has a name. And he'd know the name of all these paddocks, whether, you know, sort of, and all the copse of trees has a name. It's not just the copse of trees over in somebody's back pasture. It has a name of its own, and he'd know all these. And he'd talk about them. Then when you came back from the hunt, he'd ask you about them. He'd quiz you on it. If he told you what a copse of trees was going out on the way back, he'd want to know what it was. One of those people might have been, I wish I'd known better.
Yeah.
Well, now that's, did you ever know him, run across anything like that?
No.
Would be Ben and Major. This Major is his care of the horse.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
This Cookie would appreciate.
He had that, this is something I found all over England, Cookie. The way that an Englishman feels about a horse. He may take a horse out hunting, spend all day out. But if he's out hunting, you know, they have long gallops, that sort of thing. And then you may have a halt while the hounds have lost the scent. And the tradition and the way a man should treat his horse, they get off. They don't sit around there on top of their horses waiting for the hounds to pick up the scent again. They figure it's going to be a long time. They'll get off and loosen the girth and let that horse have his proper rest before they go on. And coming back from a hunt, this was what always impressed Mr. Tilk about Major Pilkington, is that he might hunt his horse hard, but he would never think of coming back from a hunt without stopping at a water hole, letting his horse have a drink, without loosening his girth, without doing all the things he could think of that would make that horse comfortable on the way back. And he would come back, when he got back, he would make sure he would help unload the horse, and then he'd go with the groom. Now, you see, he had a groom take care of that horse when he came back. He needn't have touched it. And he could have gone off and never seen it till the next time he went to go hunting. But he would go with the groom and watch the groom take care of the horse, make sure everything was right. So something, he would go up to the house and get a cup of coffee. But before he'd leave, he'd be back down, make sure the horse was still all right. Because, you know, sometimes they'd break out in a sweat. And he would check back just to make sure that everything was right with his horse. And this is the thing. They always think of the horse first. They always stop and think as if the way they treat it is almost as if the horse could be hurt a lot easier than they could. Of course, they can sometimes. But they always think about this. And they sit around and talk about the younger generation. If you sit in horse circles and listen to Englishmen talking about the younger generation, they don't talk about how they're wrecking up the country in fast cars. They sit around and talk about how nobody teaches them what to do with a horse when they come back from hunting, or nobody teaches them to close gates, and nobody teaches them to loosen their girths when they're walking, just walking, and nobody teaches them to give their horse a breather and all this sort of stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what brought up this subject of Pilkey, how he treated his horse after a hunt. Mrs. Tilk was lamenting that the children didn't seem to have any feeling for their horses. They didn't seem to understand that a horse could get tired or anything, and she was going on about this. That's how that came up.
Well, now, she got some of those ideas from the way you all prevaricated with her.
You think so? Boy, that was a switch, guy.
This is a smooth transition.
Pushing that Jeep up the hill so she wouldn't know you had come in late.
Mrs. Tilk had to keep order with these young people there, you know.
And furthermore, part of the time she was sickly. But did they care?
Well, she would go and say we had to be in at 11 o'clock and we couldn't make it back from movies by 11. Not if we were going to stop for a cup of hot chocolate. We'd been late about. Oh, 3 or 4 times, Cookie.
That all?
Yeah, that's all. And she could get so, when she wasn't feeling well, she'd get so cutty. It's just unpleasant to go into up to breakfast in the morning. You dreaded it all morning. And so we didn't want to be late again. Of course we were. So we didn't want her to know about it. So we stopped the car at the foot of the hill and turned it off and pushed it up the hill so she wouldn't know what time we got in.
That sounds like something you could have done, doesn't it?
And I know some other tricks you did.
Oh, I don't know. It was the stories mainly that would go up to her. If we knew that she didn't realize something, then if we knew that she didn't know when we'd gotten back, or that we had gotten back late, and she'd want to know why. This is the thing, she'd have to know why we were late. And half the time, if we told her the truth, she wouldn't be pleased, so she gets something else.
I just pushed the car up and forgot about it.
You know, I believe this meditation. I'm going to play out.
You know something of things like that.
Because he'll be down next week. And I don't know whether to go for guy's tape or not, but...
Well, we need not say anything about
him. I'll bring him down. I plan to bring him down here and leave him down here. Let him feel things out.
Sure.
Let him put in the ride.
Probably.
Borrow that.
Oh, I know. I was horse trading, cow trading back in the mountains. I run into lots of people that thought more of their horses than they did their wives. I'm serious.
Why, Cookie, I'd like to know somebody like that. Or maybe I wouldn't.
Well, he's dead now. But Marion Finley, he used to team in the oil field.
Uh-huh.
He used to what?
He used to team in the oil field. And he had a big pair of roan horses. Red roan. Them was the prettiest things you ever saw. And he was like Barbara was over in England. His horses stayed underneath his house. He lived up on top, and his horses stayed down underneath there all the time. That's where his barn was underneath his house, in a basement.
Uh-huh.
Is that right?
And his barn stayed as clean as his house.
Yeah.
Well, that's something.
His water, that is the water that the horses drank, come out of the same spigot that he drank out of. Same well, rather.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Came right out of the same well that old Marion drank out of. And he treated them horses so that when he called on them, they had confidence enough in him to know that he wasn't calling on them or something that they couldn't do, so they got down there and put out everything.
Uh-huh. They knew it.
They knew it. And they was on the bits. You had to hold them. But they wouldn't have run off for nothing in the world. But that was their forward motion.
That's
they
right.
Stayed up there. And if they got in the tights where they needed more speed, if he had it. Just
mm-hmm.
loosen the reins and they were gone, just like that. And I've yet to see him fail to move a load that he would hook his horses onto.
Oh.
That was his living. And when he hooked his horses onto a end of a wagon tongue, or hooked them to a wagon, them horses moved that wagon. He knew what they could move and what they couldn't move, and he wouldn't hook them on if he knew they couldn't move it. If he knew that them horses couldn't pull a boiler, he wouldn't hook them on a boiler, but he knew they could pull a boiler. But it took a good pair to pull it on a snake one on Mother Earth. I think my dad had the only pair of horses that would snake one on the earth.
Snake one on the earth.
Just lay it down flat on the dirt. Put a chain around it and hook the horses dead to that boiler and pull it.
That hard pulling.
Marion Finley loaded his on a boiler wagon on wheels.
Yeah.
But there were some places you didn't have a chance, you couldn't put one on wheels. It was too rough. But yet you would hook your horses on the front of that boiler and snake it.
And nothing to roll it on or anything.
No.
Now, Cookie, you had to know how to make those horses had to pull together.
They had to pull together.
They had to be a unit.
That's right. They could seesaw there and back all day and never move nothing.
Uh-huh.
But they could lay and lock them heels together at the same time, and it they just move a fabulous load.
Uh-huh.
Some people used to feel about their trucks that way.
That's right. Two years before I came to Florida, Daddy had a little pair of horses I broke for work. A little black mare, just about like Blackie.
Yeah.
Then he had a little Pinto, a little bit bigger than Tony. It was 3 and 4 year old. and I broke them in a mowing machine. And the merchant crossed that. Over on the other side of the hill, he wanted me to cut some filth for him one fall with a mowing machine. I took that little pair of horses. Neither one of them weighed a pound over 800 pounds. Little horses. I put them in that mowing machine and cut over more pasture in 3 days than the year before he got done in 2 weeks.
Is that right?
And if Harry Jarvis was living the day, he'd tell you that.
And they were little horses.
They were little horses. And he had a big pair of horses in there the year before. I could have took a big pair of horses. We had a big pair of horses. But I knew the terrain I was going over was no place to put a big pair of horses.
But you don't feel about any of your vehicles like that.
No, definitely not, because a vehicle has got no feeling.
And you never did feel that way about
one. I never did feel that way about one. I took my vehicle onto anything, regardless of whether I knew it would pull it or whether it wouldn't. I'll still hook it on there.
Yeah.
But I'll hesitate on my horses.
You just make a bulldozer out of it, or a truck, or a caterpillar.
That's right.
You got no regard for the specific gravity, for the bearings, for the heavy duty, or...
I don't pay it any mind. I just hook on and go. Now, a tractor is a different thing. You've got to look at it as if it was a horse. Because it's out there making your living. Your automobile's out there spending your living. Am I right or wrong, guy?
Well, you have a feeling for a good motor, though, Cookie.
A good motor, you keep oil changed in it. The right kind of oil in it, keep it tuned up. Running it ain't gonna hurt it.
But it's a sort of a nice thing. It's a pretty thing. It's a beautiful thing, really, in a way. But
oh,
not
yes.
A horse.
But it'll let you down a lot quicker than a horse will.
Ah, there you are.
Well, now, I speak for yourself.
You're down quicker than a horse will. Poor dog, it's sitting down there behind the trailer. It hasn't hit a lick yet, but them horses are still going.
But this is the first time since you've been coming out here that Dodge has let you down.
That's right. The first time.
And this may not be much. It's just something inside that you can't get to.
That's right. It's a timing chain is what it is. Bond, it's about time for you. Come on.
Yeah.
I wish.
I didn't know it was going to be so sustained. And Barbara got started. I said, did you ever get cut down? And she picked it up and she went ahead, talked about Ms. Parker, the lady who took care of the place, and Ms. What name? Ms. Tilk, who's sickly. And a marvelous picture. And there came Cookie about an hour late, and Barbara said, "Wait, you want me to sit?" I thought the same thing. They opened the door and closed it, and away they went. So I presume she got in on the way to auction this Friday night, the 17th of October, 69. Now, that little report at auction was nice, except it was prolonged, and there's nothing much to take place. It's an antique auction. Cookie didn't feel perfect at home, so I'm racing that. Now, this is about fears. We started with Tony. Tony's so willing. And no, Missy. Missy, I said, how'd Missy get along in her house last night? And this is Wednesday, the 22nd of October, 69, at breakfast, of all things. Wednesday, the 22nd of October, at breakfast, of all things.
Now, Missy, I haven't seen Missy
Mrs. Stahl, after she spent the night in there, does she behave all right?
Yeah, she behaves all right. She just gets her bed stirred up a bit. Walks around and she feels about that thing as if it's a jail, because she's, I don't know, she's never been kept up, has she?
No.
No. Neither's Pussy. Pussy, I'd hate to see what Pussy'd do in there. But I kept trying to think, Faye, who Pussy reminded me of. And I realized it was this pony at Tilks.
Oh.
Because there's something about the eyes, both of them.
And that long head.
And that long head. And Fizz was, he was tiny. He was one of the Tilk ponies. And all the Tilk ponies, the ones that were Tilks with a capital T, had this tremendous character. And Fizz was that sort. He was 22 years old and white by the time I knew him. And he had a long monkey face with big eyes, and then it went down so long and narrow. The only person I think who could draw him would be Fellow, because he's a cartoonist that could really do the pony justice. And he'd never been kept up. He didn't know what being kept up was. He'd always lived outside. Come worst weather or best, he lived outside. And they'd bring him in. He might stay in a box for a couple of hours between lessons or something like that, but he was never kept up. And one day he was out, during the lesson, he stepped on a staple, one of these used staples. And it made him furious. The pain made him furious. He bucked the little kid that was on him off and was charging around, snorting and saying how angry he was.
Well, would that be like stepping on a nail or something?
Oh, yeah, it'd be like stepping on a nail. It went right up into the sensitive part of his foot. You know, he just had a hole in his foot.
Well, what did he do, hop around?
He bucked. He was angry. He wasn't thinking. He was angry. He just charged around bucking.
And stepped on that foot just the same?
Just stepped on the foot just the same, I should think. But anyway, he was brought in. And the staple removed with a few blacksmith tools, because it was driven in pretty deep, and they had to really pull it out. It was hard to get out. And then the thing, he had his anti-tet shot. So the only thing to do for him was to keep him up and poultice the foot until it began to heal and we could be sure he wouldn't get infected. If you just turn them out, there's always a good chance, especially with a foot, that it'll get infected. And so we stuck him in the box and laid a nice deep bed for him. We pampered him because he was everybody's favorite. Laid a deep bed for him and put him in there. And when he was fine until he realized that he wasn't in there just for 2 hours. He was in there for the night. He was a prisoner. And the next morning when the girl went to muck him out, he was out. She opened the door, and before she could get the wheelbarrow in the door, he was out, charging up the lane with his pulses flying in all directions. And I had to poultice him every day. And I would go get him out, and he'd be oh so glad to get out. And he'd just sort of give himself a shake, and I'd tie him up someplace and change his poultice, and he was pretty good about it, especially at first. He didn't mind that. Then I'd have to take him back to the box. And we'd walk up, and we'd get to about 5 feet from the box, and he'd stop. And he wasn't going to go in. He just wouldn't go in the box. You had to convince him, really convince him, like somebody walk up behind him with a riding crop. He just wouldn't go in. And sometimes he would go in, and you know, you're always supposed to turn a horse around before you come out, because some horses will kick. Of course, Fizz would never have kicked in his life. But still, it's a good habit to get into. So I'd turn him around and slip the head collar off and go out of the box. And sometimes he would just go in as easy as you please, but when you got him turned around and slipped the head collar off, he would charge past you and out of the box.
That's
awesome.
Like
Dinkle.
Yeah,
Dinkle.
That's right.
And the funniest thing in the world is to see him charging up the drive with that poultice on. It was a good test of whether you could put a poultice on or not. But finally, see, we should have kept him up for at least another week. But see, you didn't have the heart to. She said, "Turn him out. He's too unhappy, and he just feels so bad about it." So we took the poultice off and chucked him out in the field, and he never limped. He was never lame from that.
Yeah.
Those ponies are so tough. They're also doggone independent.
Yeah.
And
the
two ponies have a character.
Oh, they were all characters. Different. They were all
they
had
strong
characters.
The two ponies do have character.
Oh, yeah. There was Fizz, who was a monkey. And he had this monkey face was sort of mischievous attitude. And then there was Cheeky, who was a little roan, and he looked like, I don't know, I can't describe him. Unless you've seen Thelwell cartoons of ponies, I can't describe him.
No, I never saw any cartoons of ponies.
I'll have to get you a book of Thelwell, but there's something.
Is that sort of a standard horse book?
He's a cartoon, British cartoonist, and he's done a series on horses and horsemanship.
Uh-huh.
Or actually, it's on ponies and horsemanship, but his cartoons are, you know, you look at them and you think, gee, they're cute, until you go to England and see the ponies, and then you see how he has caught the character of these British ponies.
Oh.
Any words go with them?
Sometimes, yeah, captions sometimes, not always.
Just captions?
Yeah.
So I need you to.
That's right.
Well, no, not really. But there was Cheeky, who was a thick-necked, sort of like Molly in miniature.
Oh.
And he had that high head carriage. He was always had his head straight up in the air, you know.
Uh-huh.
Sort of the one Molly does, only even more. When he was looking at something, his nose was up, and he was looking down his nose. At it.
Cheeky.
He was that too. I mean, that was his name, and he was just as cheeky little boy as he could be. He'd go off and do something and let you know it. You know? Says, "Look, I'm being naughty. What are you going to do about it?"
Like Dinkle. I guess Dinkle had more character than any horse we've ever had. It sounds like a British pony.
Yeah. And then there was Tickner. Now, Tickner was a Palomino, except her color wasn't good. But she had this beautiful, fine Welsh head and lovely, fine legs, and she was a show pony. She could have been, except that the people, they'd had her and sold her, and the people who'd had her let her get laminitis and ruined her feet, and so she couldn't be shown. But she was beautiful. And she had that lovely air, and she could just trot out, and she'd carry her head up and really trot out. Beautiful trot, beautiful gait. And Prissy, she was as prissy as she could be. You know, she knew she was beautiful, but she knew also sort of how to make herself look better, and she'd do it. And she would, these little kids would get on, and they all loved her, because she would trot right out. She never hesitated.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes she would go galloping off with them, but that was part of it, you know. But she had a sort of little spark of life, you see. The others could be stubborn, but Tickner was more likely to run away than she was to stop.
Oh.
The others were more likely to stop than they were to run away. And let's see, there was one more in that group. There were four of them, you see, that are always... Oh, Nicky. My Nicky. Now, Nicky was common. I mean, he just looked like a pony. He looked like anybody's pony. He was dapple gray and not too fat and not too thin and not too big and not too small and had a not too bad head, but it wasn't really pretty either. He just looked like anybody's pony. But he had character, you see. He was a good jumper and he was the best children's pony. Because he would pretty much do what he was told, but he put up just enough resistance for him to make him work.
Yeah.
And he was dependable. You could always depend on Nicky. If you had the child that wasn't too good, you could always depend on Nicky. But those four were the tilt ponies. And they were a group unto themselves, and they didn't always... There was one more. That's five. There was Little Waffy, Hiawatha. He was the smallest pony there. And he was tiny and finely made and had a gorgeous head, and he was cute. He made a profession of being cute. He made a profession of looking lovable while at the same time seeing what he could get by with. And he was another one more likely to run away with the child than he was to stop. He had life. He and Tickner were the two that sort of the children loved to ride, but you always didn't always want to see them on him.
I see.
But those five would ignore the rest of the ponies. They would go in a group by themselves and look. For instance, the chief occupation was changing pastures when the pastures weren't meant to be changed. And they would graze. You'd see them all over the field. They'd be scattered. But after a while, one of them would start walking a fence line. They must have done it like this. One of them would walk a fence line. If they found a place where they could get through, pretty soon two or three of the others would be there. And they'd work on it. And the system was this. Waffy was the smallest. Waffy would get between the wire.
Oh,
then Nicky, who was the tallest, would put his head underneath the wire and lift up. And Waffy would go through.
Oh, Bob.
I'm not kidding. One of the girls saw it and reported. And Mr. Tilk had seen him doing it sometimes. He'd figured out this system. But Nicky would lift while one of the other ponies would go under, you see. He was an important cog, common though he might have been. He was an important cog in the operation. You could never keep them in one field. You had to plan at least two fields. And you could put a gate up between the two fields, but you had to plan that they were going to get through into one of them. And then you'd figure out which two you were going to let them have and hope that they wouldn't bother to get into one of the others.
Yeah.
But Watsy perfected this art of wire. He knew exactly how much stretch it had and everything. And one of the girls says she saw him go up at a full gallop to a wire fence and go through it.
I can believe that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he wasn't even excited or frightened. He had just been turned loose from a lesson, and he was going up to join his mates, and he just went through the fence instead of around to the gap. I was not the most effective in the world.
Did you have barbed wire?
No, it's not barbed wire. It's just plain wire.
Plain wire.
Yeah.
Woven wire, we got. Just that plain woven wire fence.
No, it was, it was just single strand. Two strands, single strand. No, three strands.
Yeah.
It's put up like barbed wire is, but it doesn't have any barbs on it.
Yeah.
So they could really just...
So all they had to do was to, and it stretches, it's a lot much more stretchier
mm-hmm.
than barbed wire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all they had to do was to stretch it a little bit, and they could figure out how to get through it.
How close together were the posts? These about 10 feet.
14, I should think. I think they were a bit further than yours. just to make it easy for them.
Well, what I do, I skip a post on these cross fences. Because
mm-hmm.
the animals won't go and won't bother.
Yeah. Guy, you've had cows that figured out things like that. You remember, 18 can figure out most anything she wants to.
Yeah, I've never seen her do it.
But you know she does.
Yeah, she does.
And if she wants to get through, she'll get through.
Yeah.
Wednesday night. This is Wednesday night. This is Wednesday night, the 22nd of October, 69. Wednesday night, 22nd of October. So awful much happens. I just out of breath all the time. Barbara and Faye just come in. It's been dark sometime. And I straightened out the reel. This is the end of Channel 2 Right. This is towards the end of Channel 2 Right. And I retaped the rest of the reel. All of it has that echo in it.
And we'll see if we can keep that echo happening.
Molly, you know, I passed you on when you were coming up with the tractor guy. Or did you even see me? Yeah.
No, I didn't even see you.
I even spoke to you. You didn't even see me. I'm hurt. But,
Where were you? Out on the road?
I was on the drive, and you were just coming up. We were no more than about 15 feet apart.
One thing she did, Guy. She was, I told her when you were on the tractor to be conscious of the sound.
Yeah, listen.
Yeah. And it's just wonderful to have somebody who will do what you, you don't have to tell them 10 times like I do my students.
Yeah.
And so today she did, she missed the sound of the tractor. So she went out looking for you.
Yeah.
And that's good.
Yeah.
You, in, around.
I didn't ride her yesterday, I rode her the day before.
I see.
I decided I was originally intended just to ride to the store and get something to eat, or get a drink. I don't know. But I didn't even stop at the store. I went on down the road, and I was thinking I had some time. I might go on down that way and turn down toward Orange Lake. And I got just about to where the road goes up to 420. 220. Which one it is? The highway. And was passing a house. Molly had been terribly good. She's going really well. And I was passing this house, and a whole pack of dogs came out. There were about four or five of them, and none of them had the slightest sense about a horse. Not one of those dogs. They were all around her heels and around her legs and barking and yapping, and one little old brave yellow dog was acting as if he might like to try to hamstring her. And he never did quite get around to it. And she didn't pay attention to him the first time. He just walked on past, and she flicked her ears a few times, but she didn't break out of a walk. She didn't pay any attention to him. Not very long after that, I turned around and headed back, because I figured I'd been going out long enough, I'd better head back. And we got back to the house, and Molly heard them before they came. They had to cross the road this time. Before they even got out of their front yard, Molly was getting ready. And I couldn't make her walk. She wasn't going to run. She was just getting herself ready. And that pack of dogs came up around her, and they were because she was moving more, they were even more excited, and I couldn't get her to walk. And they charged around her, and that yellow dog got close to her heels, and she picked both of her hind feet up, and that yellow dog was back across the road. She didn't put him there, but he went.
I'd love to have seen that.
Oh, he was something. He yelped like he'd been really kicked. She just lifted her hind feet up. And of course, when the yellow dog went, all the others backed off too. They, like, she got in a whole lot of them. One brave soul stood in the middle of the road and yelled at her. And then she dropped back to a walk and walked on as if nothing had happened. But she was laying for him when we came back second night.
Isn't that something?
She was just laying for him.
Now this back up the country. We've got back up to US 60. And across the road to the Brewers. And that's where you first got on an animal?
Yeah, on an animal. It's where I first did my first riding. Brewer used to borrow a mule from his dad or somebody like that. It was a different mule usually every time, but he used to borrow one to do his plowing with. And he let me ride it when he took it out to water it. That was a big experience. He would lead it, and he'd let me sit on it while he went out to water it. But that wasn't enough for me. And I used to go down there and go in and talk to that mule, talk to him for hours, just while he was standing in his box.
Yeah.
And after a while, Junior Ferguson, one of the kids that lived up the road, he was a troublemaker always. He bet me that I couldn't sit on that mule in the stall. And I did. After I did it the first time, I'd stay on him. I'd stay on him for hours, just sitting there lying on his back. He never did anything.
He's loose?
He's loose in his box. Yeah. I'd just lie on his back and just sit around. Brewer would come by and he'd say, "I never saw the like." So anybody else do that, that mule would kick the side of the box out. And his friends would come out, and I'd be in there sitting on that mule, and he'd point me out to him. It's local curiosity. I had a great affection for that mule. I love that mule.
Yeah.
And it broke my heart. It was Carl, his little boy, was... I don't know what was wrong with that boy, but he was jealous of me and that mule. I don't know how you can be jealous of a 10-year-old and a mule. He was. And the mule came to stay on a pretty permanent basis, and so Brewer turned him out. I used to take him carrots and ride him around the pasture, just to get on his back. And Carl kept coming down there, and I'd get close to the mule, and he'd start throwing stones at it.
Oh.
Just to get it to run. And then I went away. I don't know. I think we came down to Florida. Down here to see my parents or see my grandparents or something. I remember for some reason I didn't see that mule for a long time. And I went out in the pasture and going up to it in my usual way. And it turned and kicked out at me and galloped off. And I just about broke my heart. I never went close to it afterwards, never even talked to it. I don't know whether I was hurt or frightened or what, but maybe I just figured by that time it was just no use.
That's the end of Channel 2 Right. That's the end of Channel 2 Right, and this is Wednesday night after supper or bedtime, at least past my bedtime. It's 8:30. The 22nd of October 69, Wednesday, 22nd of October 69, this is the end of Channel 2 Right. The end of Channel 2 Right. The end of Channel 2 Right. So much has happened.